Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives, a podcast created to share the stories of the most successful, innovative, and inspirational leaders in Los Angeles. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal, and I'm here with my co-host, Todd Wilson, regional president of Greater Los Angeles for PNC Bank.
Thanks, Josh. It's always a pleasure. Today's guest is all about impact, a kind of impact that doesn't just move numbers on a spreadsheet, but transforms communities and unlocks real opportunity.
Absolutely. We are here with someone who's not just in the business of finance. He's in the business of possibility. Our guest today leads a company that's helping entrepreneurs take their ideas to the next level and also making sure that no great business is being held back because of either where they're started or who they happen to be run by.
And best of all, he's building more than a business. He's building momentum. Momentum for small business owners, for local economies, and for communities that have too often been overlooked.
With Lendestry, he's created a platform that's not just about providing loans, but about providing knowledge, support, and a pathway to growth. It's a mission rooted in equity and powered by a deep understanding of the challenges that business owners face each day.
And best of all, Josh, it's working. Lendestry's deployed over $10 billion during the last 10 years, helping small businesses grow, hire, expand, and stay strong through tough times. An incredible story of innovation, service, and leadership.
He's a former banker turned trailblazer, a champion of small business, and a firm believer in the power of access. Everett Sands, welcome to C-Speak.
Josh, Todd, thanks for the opportunity. Happy to be here.
Wonderful. It's exciting to meet you in person. We've had a chance at the Business Journal to write about Lendestry, its growth, and perhaps most importantly, its impact, which is impressive. Your entrepreneurial roots trace back to your grandfather's tailor shop in Washington, D.C. What did you learn from that experience? And how did some of those early insights help guide your approach to the way you see business today?
Yeah, great question. I think for every entrepreneur, they have some why. And the why helps you get up during the day. And then it also keeps you balanced. And so my grandfather's starting in the tailoring business in the 1930s is part of my why. He started five different locations, had a school that was an apprenticeship school to help veterans. Unfortunately, for decades, veterans have had issues since they come back from the war, trying to find jobs. Yep. The bad is that we lost it because he got some bad financial advice, which today we would call predatory lending. That was my why. I grew up as a kid trying to understand why we lived in an apartment when we used to own a home, trying to understand why we didn't have those locations anymore. You get a little bit older, you start to realize what happened and the story started to unravel. The good side of it is, like many people in my family, I swept the floors and worked the cash register. And you start to learn about the resiliency of small businesses.
Your why is important. It's close to you.
That's right.
So how do these lessons influence how you lead a lending institution like Lendestry that serves thousands of small businesses throughout the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing is you start to realize that education is a fundamental component that goes along with finance. In terms of leadership of Lendestry, it's realizing that there's no silver bullet, right? So I constantly think, my grandfather's no longer here, but I constantly think about how would I educate him? What would I educate him on? And the small businesses really are my grandfather at the end of the day. So it's not only my why, I'm constantly starting to think about it and trying to think about how to get that education into that small business owner. The other step of that is really realizing there's no silver bullet. You start to realize small businesses aren't always available 9 to 5. She's running her business from 9 to 5, taking care of her family from 5 to 9. And then she can sit down and she can learn that education. That helps us to think about the different ways we can get to that small business, not only in terms of applications, but education and different information that's flowing.
So it sounds like besides lending, you feel like you have an obligation to educate them on financial literacy?
Yeah, I think, and you know this well, Todd, like, look, there's two rules in the banking world. Rule number one is pay me back. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Right? So we got to think, I got to think through, like, how do I get paid back? And education is a fundamental part of that. The business is doing well. It's not doing well. Whatever it is, right? But how do we get that education to the small business owners?
Let's stay in the past and connect with the past for another moment here.
Sure.
You previously led teams at one of the largest banks in the country.
Yeah.
From that vantage point, what unmet needs did you see in the small business ecosystem that motivated you to launch Lendestry?
I think one of the things that I saw post Great Financial Crisis, it became less taboo for a bank to say that we need to focus on operational efficiency. Every business does it. And banks are not an outlier. The downside is we spend a significant amount of time in community development telling people have a good credit score, have good income, you can get a loan. Well, if a bank starts to think about operational efficiency, there is a certain loan amount that doesn't make good business sense.
Sure.
And so now this operator coming in saying, I got an 800 credit score, I got great income, but because they want a certain loan amount or because they want, they have, you know, a certain use of funds, it might not necessarily be the best pairing with the bank. Flip side of that is you got federal regulations to say if you apply, the bank has to give you an answer, right? So there's a bit of a mismatch in terms of what's going on in the world in finance and some of the regulatory things that we have to all abide to.
Are you able to work with the applicant to kind of steer them back in the directions for what a loan amount would be more appropriate or what a better use of the funds would be?
We actually work backwards. We've got a ton of bank partners. The first thing we try to think about, and these are the core things we teach small businesses. The first core thing you always have to ask any financial institution is, do you finance me? Now, not literally me, but do you finance my NASIS code, my type of business? Second thing, do you finance my loan amount? And then the third thing is, do you finance my use of proceeds? There are banks that all they do is home mortgage loans, but you walk in and you're like, I'm a small business customer. Federal law says you apply, they got to give me an answer. And you get declined as a small business owner, right? So we go to our various bank partners and say, okay, tell us what your specialty is. And then let's talk about ways that we can help, right? So let's use something simple. Let's say that a bank says, look, I'd love to pick them up at $1 million and above in the loan amount, which generally equals some revenue size. We'll help be that in between lender. So they have a responsible lender. They don't have to go to a predatory lender. And so they actually have a way to get to that bank. We deliver loan tapes. That's a fancy word for saying the history of the loan to our bank partners. So it's actually a business doesn't always understand, but we're actually marketing them to a future bank that's going to take them from us. That's the whole mission of LendIndustry is let's help be in that middle ground so they can get to greener pastures, which we call bankable.
Do we talk about the gap, the obvious gap,
Sure. The
traditional banks and financial institutions can't fill in that small business lending. When you built LendIndustry, how did you approach building a model that enabled you guys to fill those gaps that banks couldn't historically do?
I think, again, it's kind of somewhat sitting down with the investor, which in this case would be banks, and just saying, help us define the path and the road to success. We represent the small businesses in that meeting. Then we turn around with the small business and say, okay, we're going to represent the bank and we're going to help you get there. 10 years ago, there were 10,000 community banks, $1 billion in assets and below. Now there's 1,000.
And that's shrinking now.
Shrinking. I mean, last year was the first year we had no bank applications. So it's constantly shrinking. And what that means to the business owner in general is their options are shrinking. So our role gets bigger and bigger. For example, when LendIndustry first started, we did loan sizes between $50,000 and $250,000. Now we do $10,000 to $5 million. Current projections are things are going to start shifting towards manufacturing. Manufacturing in the U.S. is not cheap.
Correct.
You need larger loan amounts. You need more money.
The need for your services is going to continue to increase each and every year, which is not a bad business model.
Not a bad business model at all. I think every entrepreneur finds the need or finds the opportunity, and then they try to exploit it in a positive way.
So I know part of the LendIndustry growth story is tied into your partnerships.
Sure.
You've had a number of different partnerships.
Sure.
I know. Starbucks is one, Amazon is one.
Yeah.
And they've been critical to your growth. I think Starbucks invested $100 million from their community resilience fund. I also know that you partnered with the women's professional soccer team in New York.
Yeah.
You know, how do you evaluate and structure these various partners that both elevate your brand and create a scalable impact for LendIndustry?
The first thing I would say to anyone that's listening is most small businesses that succeed tie themselves to anchor institutions. There's a reason to partner with a PNC bank or a larger institution because you get to learn from that institution. There's a drafting effect. I don't know if anybody's a NASCAR fan, but
yeah,
good to run the draft before you try to take over and take the lead in a race. We're trying to get to those small businesses that need access to capital and trying to support them. We're trying to support that anchor institution as they're growing and as they're able to help their small businesses grow. It actually helps the ecosystem, helps margins, all types of benefits are there. And then number three, there's no silver bullet to education. We build technology that looks like a platform on Amazon, a platform that's in the general public, LendIndustry.com. We're changing the way we handle the process and the application. We're using artificial intelligence to make the process smoother. All these things are important, but believe it or not, that anchor institution plays a role. It's actually giving us feedback. They're actually sharing with us, like, okay, this is, if you want to do procurement at Starbucks, this is how you do it. right? And those things are actually really important in trying to help that small business progress.
It's such a true partnership in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
As I hear you talk about partnerships, those come in a lot of different forms.
Yeah.
Lendistry has been a go-to partner for government programs in relief, going all the way back to COVID-era funding and more recently wildfire relief funding. What does value creation look like in a partnership, and how are you always ensuring that it's mutually beneficial?
Sometimes you're trying to build a brand, like as Todd mentioned, kind of FC Gotham, women's soccer is a brand, WNBA, our partnership with the Sparks, it's a brand builder, and it's an intentional brand builder. Like mm-hmm. we're literally saying, who is the audience that we're trying to attract? Then the other side of it, to your question, is mission, right? We're spending our money in places and with partners that we think will benefit the community. Everybody knows there's a pay issue inside of women inequality, mm. right? So we spend our money there, we're helping to support that. The other side is when you think about lending, going back to those two rules of pay us back, I actually think about the whole ecosystem. I mean, a community burning down, think about the businesses in the community. That's the easy one. But think about the effect of those people who couldn't drive into that restaurant or can't drive into those stores, or the suppliers that got affected, or the workers that now can't go to work. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I can't even imagine building a house, right? The amount of time you'd have to take off work just to choose the bricks. Those are all things we think about because that's all relative to us getting paid back. So when we go to some of these governments, we say, let us help you deploy the capital. As a lender, we know how to take in the money. We know how to push out the money. We know how to have fraud controls. Those are actually all things that we have to do as a part of lending. Let us support some of these grant programs and other deployment programs because we think we can do it as efficiently or more efficiently.
So I know you have a national footprint, but let's localize it for our listeners, in particular here in Los Angeles. A lot happening in Los Angeles over the next several years.
Sure.
Some World Cup, Super Bowl, Olympics. How are you helping small businesses to capture opportunity, build capacity in preparation for this influx of investments?
I think it first starts with them understanding the procurement process. So we spend a significant amount of time talking to businesses about how to bid. They got to have margins in their contract. They have to understand workforce development, which we would all call hiring people.
Yeah.
So we're teaching them those basic core skills. At the same time, we're creating some new products, like we have small business contracting, purchase order financing. And that's really built around a very simple concept, which I'll call simple interest. Give them a streamlined process to borrowing and a streamlined process to paying back. Because look, you know, when you get into some of these procurement opportunities, you don't actually know when the money's coming. We're trying to think of what's the responsible way to lend to them. And on the other side, we're talking to some partners to say, how are we going to do this? Like, is your RP going to be 5 days? Is it going to be 30 days? You know, let's really think through the strategy. Some of the nonprofits involved are on milestone contracts.
Yeah.
Milestone contracts are not the best for nonprofits. They actually need the mobilization capital, just like any small business does. We started to create programs to help the nonprofits get involved too, because we think that's really important to the ecosystem. The game plan continues to be make it available, and then we hope it works out.
I guess Lendistry's taken a more interesting shift recently. We've talked a lot about the small businesses, but as far as I understand, you've expanded into home lending. Is this true now?
Yeah.
From a growth perspective, how does this vertical differ from traditional small business lending?
When you think about the ecosystem, we can give you the best small business loan. You go home and home is in disarray for whatever reason. That's a mental issue that happens to that small business. And business owner, how do I meet payroll? How do I grow? How do I win that contract? How do I take advantage of the Olympics or one of the sporting events? If we can give them a safe place, considering we already have their documents, in terms of the home financing process, then that's just a good look in terms of taking care of the community. The flip side, as you all know, when we start to think about things like LA wildfires and some of the natural disasters we've been involved in, it's also trying to help our clients like states and cities and counties think about how they can rebuild, but having the regulatory requirements that are required to help them, which is obviously the mortgage licensing and servicing.
It is interesting because with these small businesses, often owned by an individual. So you're getting their personal balance sheet, you're getting their personal income statement, as well as the businesses.
That's right.
So it's kind of an obvious extension.
Yeah, and home ownership is the greatest builder of wealth in the US.
I would say a couple of times a year, at least, we at the Journal will host seminars and roundtable discussions and panels about things like access to capital. And one of the things that also comes from that is access to information and education. At this point, you've overseen the deployment of more than $10 billion in capital, which makes such an impact to businesses. Looking at our environment today and things we'll see in the future. So in a moment of so much economic unpredictability. What signs are you looking for in a business to know that it's going to be, quote, loan ready, or that they're going to be able to pivot and able to be flexible as needed? Are there specific KPIs that you look and guide your approach, or is it more of a holistic?
We definitely track NASIS codes, locations, and different things like that. I mean, as we've already mentioned, we're a partner at Amazon. Hard situation right now with tariffs. And it's really not about the tariff. It's really about having the stability to know how to price.
Yes.
Yep. And it's always been that way for businesses. So we try our best to say, look, we have no choice. We're a lender. We have to tighten up, whether it be our guidelines, margins, or how we look at customer debt service ratios. But at the same time, educating them, you know, there are other places you can get your product produced, right? Now, you might not be able to do it overnight, but there is a way to think about it. Mm-hmm. There are pivots. And we saw some of this during the pandemic. Some of our manufacturers started to do the PPE equipment, right? Mm-hmm. Some of our restaurants started to deliver liquor. Right. So there are plenty of examples. I do think that the current business owner is a little bit more resilient. You know, if there is such a good thing as a pandemic,
sure,
it did teach them how to pivot a little bit quicker, whether it be using e-commerce, digitizing their business. So we do have a little bit of that draft going on. And so it's a little bit easier to educate them and remind them that they've done this before. I think our main goal at the end of the day is to try to be flexible with the capital. We can't be super flexible, right? There's no 0% interest rates and no regard for the credit profile. But really trying to help them think through what's the strategy, both at the true strategic level, but at the tactical level to help them benefit.
We've known each other for a while, Everett.
Yeah.
I've had the opportunity to come to your company and see how you operate. You're really so much more than a lending institution. You really are a fintech company.
That's right.
I mean, data and technology drives what you guys do. What do you see the role of fintech as fintech continues to grow and evolve in the small business community, particularly these underserved communities?
I think the benefit we have is we're like fintech like 5.0, and the rest of the world is probably at 2.0. 1.0 is like banks are bad, we're going to displace them. And I'd be like, this is not like Netflix versus Blockbuster here. This is money.
We're saying we're Blockbuster?
Right. Money is not going to just disappear. Banks are always going to be around. And I think what makes us 5.0 is that we literally have these strategic partnerships with other financial institutions to create the right path for the business owner. To your point about data, I think what helps us with data is being able to really take a true financial approach. Some businesses need a loan guarantee that, or credit enhancement that we can get from the state. Sometimes we need to be sitting there helping to design the credit enhancement, which I think makes us unique. We've done some work with SBA and other agencies. Every customer is not the same. Leveraging data helps us when we think about how to structure the loan, credit enhancements, loan guarantees, and that allows us to provide more capital to the various communities that we serve.
All right, Everett, if you don't mind, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Sure.
What's something that a small business owner might be surprised to learn about how your products can help their businesses grow?
You know, I think the most impressive thing that we've been able to do is help customers think about how to borrow. If you take SBA as an example, most customers think one SBA loan up to $5 million. It's actually unlimited loans to $5 million. And so we've helped to change narratives like that. Like, hey, you don't need to borrow $500,000 from us right away.
You can come back.
You can come back. Most businesses are like, this is too dramatic. I never want to do this again. We try to make the process simple and remind them, we actually have all your information. This could actually be a very easy comeback because you can actually see all the stuff you gave us inside your portal.
American Banker named Lendestry one of the best places to work in fintech. Congratulations on that achievement. That's a big deal.
Appreciate it.
How do you cultivate a culture that drives performance and reinforces purpose?
I think having a mission and a purpose is table stakes today for any business. You know, the why. Why are we here? What are we doing? The benefit I have is that the majority of people have small business in their life. Mm-hmm. Whether they're directly connected or it's family adjacent. Now, the truth is, I got a really good team because we have cereal and I don't know anything about cereals, which was to choose. I'm like, I eat like the same Cocoa Puffs every day. You know, we've got flavors of oatmeal and all types of, you know, what I'll call creature conference. I would encourage any small business owner to think of their office as a destination as opposed to just an office. We have an amazing team that's really handling that. In addition to that, the brands and what you stand for and who you partner with, that really resonates with our team. And we've been conscious about who we're partnering with, and the team has appreciated that and enjoyed that.
Every move strategic.
Every move strategic.
So we talk about technology and you as a fintech. We talked about how you lever technology. One of the things that our listeners love to hear about is AI. So
yeah.
To talk about how you in your internal processes leverage AI, what conversations with your team, with your leadership team, and around the responsibility of implementing AI into your processes.
I would tell the business owners to think about it like this. You have two types of AI. One is open AI. We all said, hey, Siri, all our phones would light up. The second one is agentic AI. It's when you call your credit card company and it says, this is what your balance is. Press one for this, press two for this. I would encourage the business owners to really start to think about what are the, what I'll call mundane or routine things that you do inside of your business that you can start to leverage artificial intelligence for. And that's what we've done. And I'll give you a classic example. A lot of business owners apply and we say, what's your NACES code? They're like, I have no idea. But we have AI that says, type in some information, and it'll search for you and find the NACES code for you. And then we have AI that says, that didn't match what you put in your tax return in milliseconds. If you think about old school lending, that might take somebody 5 days to a week to tell you, you made a mistake. We use AI like to literally a millisecond say, that's not what your tax return said. Do you want to go with what the tax return said or what you typed in? And that's important because you could actually be declined. Right? Because I can't listen. I can't like lend to like a, I'll give you a classic one. We can't lend to a public relations because, you know, it's government, public relations. But a lot of times what people really are saying is marketing.
Yeah.
But they get confused because the NACES codes, it's hard for me to tell. So I know it's hard for them to tell. So little things like that are really important as we start to progress and try to make the process simpler.
Todd referenced our listeners who are business leaders in all different industries. Sure. They're the C-suite executives and the next wave of C-suite executives coming up. What's an area that you think our listeners across all industries are still potentially underestimating both the opportunity and the responsibility of driving equity?
So I'll go back to artificial intelligence. I think artificial intelligence is like the computers in the 70s. I don't believe that it's actually going to replace people's jobs. I think what's going to happen is those that understand it will actually be more prolific. And for the businesses that understand how to leverage it, again, doesn't have to replace everything. Mm. But if you could just get some of the customer service done by artificial intelligence, some, again, I call them the routine task. Anyone that has a business where literally something is done, I call it 4 or 5 times a day, should really start to think about technology in a different way. And if the business owners, look, that's not for me. That's why you have summer interns, right? LA has got a bunch of colleges. Connect with one of the colleges. I don't care if it's a small college or a large college, but there's plenty of younger adults looking to add things of value. I would simply say something like, hey, here's your summer job. Figure out how to do this, right? And I think what will happen is because our business owners are so innovative and creative, they'll find their way. They just need a jump start.
So you think it's less about replacement and more about increasing efficiency?
Absolutely.
We talked about using AI, particularly in the data. How does this allow LendIndustry to make better, faster, more fair lending decisions?
I mean, first of all, the key is that it doesn't make the actual credit decision. But what it does is it helps the borrower be able to efficiently operate and perform with us. And the definition of performance, as you know, in a loan process is having all the documents.
Yep.
Complete and accurate documents, which all of a sudden then turns into a better experience because it's faster, right? Which then turns into the actual human who makes the credit decision being able to say, oh, I understand this better, right? I have more complete information. I understand exactly what you're doing.
Well, how do you personally define being a responsible lender and why is this so important to you and your company?
I tend to think about it as 3 parts: product, process, and policy. And how can I stay focused and our team stay focused on those 3? Trying to make innovative products could be how we deliver the product. It could be how we think about the product. I'll give you an example. We built a technology for virtual wallet. It's the same technology that Venmo uses, same technology Cash App uses. You might say, well, why do we do that? When we were starting to think about procurement, what we're really talking about is a contract coming in that the customer has and really getting inside of that pay cycle. If we receive the payment from the government, the supporting agency, we take out our interest and then we push the money out. That actually helps us solve the risk problem. If we could do that in seconds or minutes through an app, then all of a sudden the business owner feels really comfortable because they're used to that. They're used to pushing a button and getting their money in 2 days, 3 days, or different things like that. That's a product and process, because process is about really thinking about how to make it smoother and easier for the customer pushing that button. I think our politicians are doing a great job. There's always money deployed. The mismatch is the execution and the policy talking to each other. We try to spend a significant amount of time with various policyholders, city, county, state, doesn't matter, federal government, and really saying, here's how we don't do round peg square holes anymore. Let us as the executor help you think through the strategy.
We've talked about the success you've had lending $10 billion over the last 10 years. What role do you play in the next 5 years in the future of small business finance?
First of all, we got to do $10 billion in 5 years. I think the other thing is continuing to connect the dots between kind of Fortune 500s inside the financial institution space and outside, and connecting them with small business. There's going to be lots of opportunities. You know, month or a couple months, we win another bowl, right? So a Super Bowl, we already had the Rose Bowl. We've got the Olympics, WNBA, All-Star Weekend, which I just heard about that we won, you know. So, you know, we're becoming kind of the sports capital. How are we going to get our businesses involved in the Super Bowl, the things like this? Those are the things that I think we could help connect those dots, because to get in and to win the RFP is one thing. To be able to execute, usually there's a capital barrier that we got to help bring down.
So Everett, I've seen you winning various awards here in Los Angeles. You're on the cover of the Business Journal. What do you want your legacy to be with Lendustry, and what sort of impact do you want to leave with Lendustry?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. We've now taken about 1.8 million applications.
Wow.
5% of US small businesses. And as I sit here today, I realize we kind of have two parts. Number one is providing access to capital at scale. I think the second thing is being a trailblazer.
Yep, you are one.
Thank you. Hopefully it's better for the next fintech or the next responsible lender or the next individual that wants to make impact. Obviously, the next business like my grandfather is what I really care about as well. That's really important to me. And then I think the other side of that is helping to develop the leadership culture. I do think it's hard for small businesses and everything that they do, and culture is really important as we move forward and try to be good people.
Well, Everett, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to get to know you.
Appreciate it.
Small business is such an important part of what drives our economy across the country, but definitely here in Los Angeles as well. To see the way you're helping small businesses is really making a difference, and value your leadership. So thank you so much for sharing a little bit with us today.
Yeah. Thanks again. Thanks, Todd. Thanks, Josh. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
And best of all, it's not only you're impacting small businesses, but it's the people that work at and run and lead those big businesses. You're impacting the people within those communities.
Absolutely.
It's been an exciting conversation. On behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC Bank, I want to thank you all for listening. To ensure that you are notified about our future podcast releases, please be sure to subscribe or follow. Thank you again. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, the language of executives.